The House Committee on Veterans Affairs. First, I'm going to open up a public hearing on 3208 and 3583 simultaneously. So we have a public hearing. The first people to speak would be Representative Girard and Senator Whitsitt, if he's... Where did Girard go?
He's just outside. I got delayed by the speaker. I made a phone call on his behalf.
There you go. Representative Girard, you're up.
Oh.
I apologize.
Yes, read the bill. Read the bills, please. Plural.
House Bill 3583 directs the Department of Veterans Affairs to contract with Lane Community College to study skilled nursing bed needs in veterans in Oregon. And then House Bill 3208 allows for the development of two additional veterans homes.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and good afternoon. Members of the committee, I'm here in support of House Bill 3583, and I'm also in support of its co-bill 3208. So if, with the chair's permission, I'll just kind of expand a little bit and tell you what both bills are basically about. Oregon needs more care for its veterans. I'm sorry, I'm Representative Bill Girard, State Representative District 56. That's what both of these bills are about, giving the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs the ability to conduct a statewide study to determine the number of skilled nursing beds that are needed to meet the current and future demand for veteran skilled nursing, including, and most importantly, Alzheimer's and other dementia. It amends ORS 408.385 to say the State of Oregon and Director of ODVDA shall establish two Oregon veterans homes and to have them authorized in that regard. We have, after a meeting with Mr. Willis just a few moments ago, have decided that probably merging House Bill 3208 and House Bill 3583 and dismissing the financial requirements that are a part of 3583 will enable the bill to move forward in the direction that the Director of Veterans Affairs wishes. So we have no problem with that prospective merger. And I'm sorry, that discussion just took place just moments ago with Director Willis. We need to have this study done so that ODVA can resume possible future selection through the RFP process. With a growing veterans population needing care, this bill will send Oregon on its way to possible planning and implementation of better care for our veterans in the future. And as a veteran myself, I certainly urge the committee to consider a dash one amendment that would merge both 3208 and 3583 together.
Thank you. Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Our honor.
Apologies for walking in late. For the record,
you're on Senate time, though, aren't you, Senator?
We're on Senate time. You remember that. For the record, I'm Senator Doug Whitsitt. I would concur with what my good friend, Representative Girard, has just said. The department believes that the study would need... The department believes that the study would help them to better recommend the location and size of the homes needed to best serve Oregonians, and they believe that they need the authorization from the legislature in order to perform that study. That's what this bill's about. I think Representative Girard has covered everything that I wanted to say, so thank you.
Mr. Chair, I might add... I have letters from the county commissioners of Klamath and Lake counties that you will be, each member will be given copies of, supporting this plan of action to eventually develop these new homes.
Any questions from the committee?
I have one.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator, and thank you, Representative. In 3208, if we merge these bills, I notice on line 13 of the 3208, It says may begin planning for and developing two additional. Is there a reason we settled on two because that's the need, or should we just not have a determined number so that they can plan and determine and then move forward with that deal? It's just a question. I'm just curious.
You want to answer that?
Go ahead.
Basically, there was X number of dollars allocated. These homes are built on the basis of federal dollars committed and matching monies from the communities. Earlier, there were two 150-bed hospitals to be intended to be awarded. One was to the Lebanon area, and the other one was not. So, and I'm, maybe Director Willis would like to address, but to this particular question, but what then was decided that it would be more beneficial to the veteran to have two 75-bed homes rather than one 150 because of the need to serve those in certain regions. And that's what's very important is the population in these regions as far as the federal government is concerned. I hope that answers your question.
Follow-up? No, it does, kind of. I'm just curious about the specifics of two additional, where the need might be determined to be more. We're currently underserving that, you know, in that capacity. So I just wonder if we would, through planning, maybe say, gosh, yeah, two, but we actually would like to get to four more. I'm very concerned about the amount of soldiers deploying today, those that have deployed in the past. And also, we are becoming a great state of supporting our veterans, so hopefully we're going to get more veterans into our state. But that being the case, I want to make sure we're able to not have to come back to the body to get to go two more if the needs are determined through study that we need four.
I think your point is well taken. I think as Representative Girard said, there is a right now there's a constraint on funding, and actually that funding is competitive among states. So that would be the first point. And the second point is that if we're only going to have a finite amount of money to only, you know, for instance, only to provide another 150 beds, there's an economy of scale concern that if you make them too small, they simply won't stand alone. And the operation and maintenance of these homes, as I understand it, must come from the standalone from their fees and so forth. So we're trying to walk the narrow line between what is available and what is actually economically feasible to do.
I might also add, Co-Chair Esquivel and Representative Matthews, that these two that are presently planned for would be with a footprint to expand almost double in size to 150 at some future time when the finances are available. So that thinking ahead is still part of this entire plan.
Perfect. Thank you.
Any other questions? I'd like to make a statement on this. I believe that we passed out of this committee a bill that would allow Roseburg to build a home. And I believe it was all local matching funds. They had a $10.5 million price tag to it, fiscal. But when we sent it down to Ways and Means, I was aware that it was all local match. So it turns out to be literally nothing for the state of Oregon. So, and that's what these are about, I believe. And I strongly feel we need one in Medford, Klamath Falls, and eventually into the Bend area. I don't know if we have anything in Bend, but those are areas, I think. And then we need to get one up in northeastern Oregon in the valley up there, the strip up there between Baker City and Pendleton.
If I may add, Co-Chair Esquivel, Klamath County has already passed a bond levy for the matching money. So the matching money from Klamath is already available, which obviously has my folks in Klamath and Lake County rather excited about the possibility of being able to go through the RFP process and perhaps win this time. So that's our motivation for being here.
Anything else? Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Representative. Always
thank you,
a pleasure.
Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you.
Mac McDonald, Jim, did you want to speak on this issue?
Yes, Co-Chair, just briefly. Co-Chair Esquivel, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Willis, the Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I want to point out to the committee that through 38 Codified Federal Regulation 59.50. The study of Oregon in terms of its senior veterans, nursing home, and domiciliary bed needs through the year 2020 has been concluded by the federal government. And they have determined that we need 907 beds. At the Dalles, we currently have 151. We're going to build 150 in Lebanon, and if the legislature authorizes the home at Roseburg, there'd be 150 more. As you can clearly see, we're still going to be short by about half. The plan that Representative Girard and Senator Whitsitt just discussed with the committee is based on the fact that if you take care of Metro East going toward the Dalles from the metro area, and understanding that we have an interagency agreement with Washington State that allows some Metro veterans to go to Olympia if they wish, and then understanding that the Lebanon home should encompass a catchment area from Yamhill County to the southern Lane County line and the Oregon coast, then we still, until unless or until we're authorized Roseburg, we can't take care of southwestern Oregon. We haven't taken care of Bend south to Klamath Falls, and we have not taken care of the high desert, which is everything else east of Highway 97. The reason we're talking about looking at these two additional homes is because if we even had the three, if we had the Dalles, Lebanon, and Roseburg, we still have this whole part of our state with these senior veterans who are part of that 907 beds that have no facility at all. And that's one of the reasons why they talked about maybe you begin with a home of 75 beds, assuming that the economy is the scale will pay to operate it, with the understanding that that footprint could be expanded to an additional 150 beds. Now, the other thing that I need to make clear is that the Lebanon home has the ability to expand on its footprint to 250, and so does the Roseburg one. But again, you're not reaching out to the other part of the state that could probably function with a smaller facility. Also, given the fact that there is a different way of building these homes today, they're not going to be in the future an institutional type setting where you have one large building with a whole bunch of wards in it. What you have is what's called the small house concept, where you have individual communities. In sort of a pod or modular, if you will. Now, this is not a modular building, but if you see what I'm saying. So here's a pod, which is a community. Then there's another one that's another community, and so on. And that lends itself well to a more home-like setting, which is where both the Health and Human Services Department of the federal government and the federal VA are trying to go, and I agree with that. It's also the policy of the restructure of providing health services in our state. That's where they're going. So it's not that we can't continue to care for these folks at senior nursing care or even memory care, Alzheimer or other dementia. It's that the formulation of the construction is the small house or greenhouse concept for the future. And so I think that lends itself well. And I think this study that we're proposing to do in the interim, when we come back and report to you, not only will we tell you where the underserved senior veterans are geographically in our state, but how we might best serve them for the future in the next 2, 4, and 6 years through these biennium processes. So thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I appreciate the chance to clarify that a little bit.
Co-Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt McDonald, United Veterans of Oregon. We support the bill. I'm the one that came up with the two additional. I think it'd be great if we had just dropped the two and said additional veterans homes, but the main purpose of this is so ODVA can get in the planning process, because the federal government, as you know, takes so long to get approval to do something, and we need to get it on now because we need them now. So if you drop the two, that'd be fine with us. And just made it additional veterans' homes. If you have any questions, we'd be glad to answer.
Any questions? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Anyone else would like to comment on 3208 or 3583? Yes.
Good afternoon, committee, and co-chair, Representative Squill. I'm so glad that we could come here. I am Reverend Bob Biggs, the president of the Oregon Washington Veterans Committee, and also the state grange of this Veterans Committee for the entire state of Oregon. I speak to you with some experience on particularly the matter that's in all of our minds lately, is that situation of having Alzheimer's come increasingly more to our population. I bring to your attention the great articles running right now in the Statesman Journal here in Salem about this issue. I think that we all should very carefully read that. That affects a lot of veterans in that population. And I'm certainly very concerned about those areas that previous speakers have spoke about that are out of the perimeter, so to speak. Those people that are out in the boondocks. Those veterans, the young ones coming back, we deal with them all the time. Young wives tell me that their husbands are not understandable, not controllable, need something to do, need help. And we don't want them clear up in a big Portland hospital lost in the city. We need a facility down here where we live, and you know the areas I'm speaking of. I completely concur. I just got a call from a young wife over in that region, and she said, I tell you what, it looks like it's breaking up our home. It's breaking up my marriage. It's beyond what I can handle. If there was only some facility that could do some care for my husband where he can talk to some professionals that he won't talk to me or the family that can help us through this incredible thing that's happening to him from the war horror that he has gone through. And we don't have time to talk about other cases, but I can assure you that as a chairman of this very active committee, reaching out in your grange areas where each of you come from, we have a speaker program that goes to those granges and talks about all kinds of issues concerning veterans and their problems, and we're getting there as fast as we can. It's an awesome job, but we're doing a pretty good job on it. I am so encouraged that we develop this extra care facilities. I have a young daughter down in one of those regions with a husband that is appearing to go into Alzheimer's. Read the statistics. Very young people are coming up with it. I worked for 4 years in Portland area while I was recovering from a war injury in an Alzheimer's center. I couldn't believe it. When a 45-year-old lady came in, I read her chart. Her diagnosis was this horrible condition, completely devastating to her husband, a woman that was a top real estate lady. And we used to go around in the car, and she would tell me, oh, that's a big home that I sold years ago. She would become clear. She would tell us all about all kinds of things. And then we go home, and she said, Reverend Bob, what'd you do with my shoes? I've got to go to a wedding. Completely changed the subject, completely confused who she was. It's needed, and it can be set up under this program. It's a wonderful situation where we can pull in some specialists, not a terrible cost, and I know you're frugal in this committee, and not a terrible cost. We can pull in some help. I really do believe that. And here we are with my co-chair, good old Native American fellow here, and he represents some of our Indian viewpoints of our state, too, I'm sure.
I think some of you remember me from last time. I kind of drug it out too far. But my name is Nathan Doan. I'm vice chairman of the Veterans Committee for the Grange here in Salem. I just have a few things to really point out about this. Like I talked in our last meeting that we had, It's the values and standards that people have in their heart when they want to help others, if they are going to help others. When you help a veteran that's been to war and disabled, then you're helping someone that in their heart believes in this country. That's why they went. They don't have to go. There's a lot of people that don't go. But I think that everyone on the panel understands the need to take care of others whenever they're injured, especially if they're a veteran serving their country. And I am a veteran. I'm 100% service-connected, disabled. I have congestive heart failure. I've been through a war. I was wounded 3 times before I was 19 years old. And I appreciate the Veterans Administration's help. I really do, because they have helped me an awful lot. And in this area here, all I've got to say, I can't throw any statistics at you because I really don't know the statistics. All I know are people I have met, talked to, encountered, and so forth. And I know this is a need, a terrible need. And so I'm all for it. I hope you are. I hope it goes through. I hope we get the housing. We need to stand behind our veterans. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions you might have?
Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you, gentlemen.
Well, thank you.
I just wanted to make a statement that every one of us that went to war that have been in a combat zone in a combat theater have seen things we should never see.
Yeah.
And each and every one of us to a certain point is injured to a certain degree.
Yeah.
It's things that we'll never, ever be able to explain unless you've been in that particular situation. And we know, and it's hard to explain, but I understand.
Yeah.
I want to tell you that as a chaplain in the front line of the Korean War, way back in the early 50s, those men are coming forward, and so many of them I'm tracing out are finding that they're getting this condition. And most of all, in the areas that are not being served by the nursing home situation because it is not available.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for hearing us. God bless all.
On this particular issue, anyone else would like to speak to this? Seeing none, I would like to say my understanding is we're going to combine these two bills with an amendment, that'll be 3208 and 3583, to make them into one bill. So that's what we shall do, and we'll reschedule that for a week or so, and you get our amendments in, and we'll go forward. Seeing no one that wants to speak to this, I'll close the hearing on 3208 and 3583. I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 72. Would you read the bill, please?
Senate Bill 72 amends the definition of disabled veteran from a person entitled to disability compensation to a person who has a disability rating. This has an emergency clause. It's effective on passage. It went through the Senate, has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Director Willis.
Co-Chair Escobar, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Willis, the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. You have my written testimony, so I'll simply tell you this is a housekeeping bill that changes the definition from a person receiving compensation and changing the word to a rating from the United States Department of Veterans Affairs. The reason for that is you can achieve a 0% rating from USDVA as a disabled veteran when you first file. That rating can be changed over time. But currently, under our definition, it says you have to be receiving compensation, and a 0% rating does not receive compensation. Therefore, we're cutting out a percentage of people who are rated as disabled veterans, even though they're not being compensated. So we want to include everyone under the definition, and that's the purpose of this bill. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Director Willis? Seeing none.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Director Willis. Reverend Bob, did you want to speak to this?
I think we said pretty well what we had to say.
How about you?
No, thanks. I'll just listen.
Okay. There you go. Anyone else like to speak to Senate Bill 72? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 72. I'm going to, at this time, turn this gavel over to one of my co-vice chairs, and I'm going to let them do some of this because it's a very good process for you.
I love that.
You're on,
okay.
Representative.
So we're opening on 73, right? We'll open a public hearing on 73, Senate Bill 73.
Senate Bill 73 allows the Department of Veterans Affairs to assign more than one employee to provide oversight of management of the second veterans home planned in Linn County. It permits the second Oregon veterans homes to admit patients eligible under federal law. This has an emergency clause. It's effective on passage. This went through the Senate. It has no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal statement issued.
Can you come back up?
Thank you, Madam Vice Co-Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Willis, the Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Again, you have my written testimony in front of you, so please let me summarize. At any veterans home operation, in most cases, these are contracted operations. In other words, these are not state employees. But we have the ultimate responsibility for the operation and administration of these homes. And as a result, it is necessary to have a liaison person on duty at the home. Currently at the home in the Dalles, we have a liaison at admissions officer full-time, and we have an administrative person full-time. Well, I appreciate the original restriction that was asked for when we were building the second veterans home. It is clear to me that we may need the latitude of at least two employees to be able to cover the home at all times. And I'll give you an example. You don't have the employees there for when things are going well. You have the employees there for when we have some challenges in the home. And one of the most serious events that occurs in a veteran's home, and in fact in any skilled nursing environment, is what is called a sentinel event. And that's an event where there's a serious injury to one of the residents, and we need to determine several things right away. Number one, how and where should we treat this medical emergency for the resident? And more importantly, how did it happen? What exactly led to this, quote, sentinel event? And one of the things that we want to make sure of is that we have a state employee on the spot who is familiar with how to handle these kinds of events and how to work with our contracted employees to take care of the event when it happens, and to determine what, including training, needs to be done so that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. This person also tracks the ability of the people trying to be admitted to the home to make sure that they're qualified to be in the home and that we're admitting the right people to the home. And so I can tell you from experience in the Dalles and operating that home since 1997, clearly, to only have one person on site means, for one thing, they could never get sick, they could never take training, and they could never take a day off. That's unrealistic. So we're simply asking for permission to have more than one employee at the home in Lebanon. And as it says in my testimony, we may need the two I just discussed, or even more. It's just too soon to tell. But to try to operate it with one person, we know from experience that simply won't work. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Representative Huffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director Willis, is this the policy portion of what will be a POP that you'll present to Ways and Means?
It would not, well, let me start over. Madam Co-Chair or Co-Vice Chair and Representative Huffman. I don't believe at this session we would. We're simply pointing out the potential need for the additional people, but I don't think we do it this session. But as the home comes toward being online, we would. And
this is just kind of setting the stage
yes.
for future appropriation of the FTE, if you will.
That is correct, Representative.
Okay.
You are correct.
Thank you.
Representative Escobar, and I see your hand come up.
No, I'm fine.
Okay.
Representative Huffman was able to jump ahead of me there.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Reverend Biggs, did you want to come back up?
I think my assistant signed too many pages. To
okay.
You fully agree with our good
so you're both good. Okay, all right. Well, then I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 73, and we will open a hearing on Senate Bill 276.
Senate Bill 276 recites the Legislative Assembly findings that the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, Veterans Health Administration, should be encouraged to export its expertise in military sexual trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other conditions associated with military service to outside healthcare providers. It also encourages outside healthcare providers to seek continuing education related to military sexual trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other conditions associated with military service. This has an emergency clause. It's effective on passage. It went through the Senate. It has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. And?
All right, Director Willis, come back up. Just having sit there.
Thank you, Madam Vice Co-Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Willis, the Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I'm here today to support Senate Bill 276. This measure comes to you from a legislative task force that you've already heard about, which is the one on women's veterans health care. And they are encouraging the Veterans Health Administration to export its medical expertise on PTSD and military sexual trauma to other healthcare providers via the sponsorship of continuing medical education. And I'm going to go off the testimony because it's in front of you and just cite a couple of things that I'm familiar about in our particular state. Well, the mental health professionals and counselors that are working in both of these areas are very good at what they do. The simple fact is there are not enough, and they are not in all areas of our state. By training up existing mental health professionals in the private sector as well as these public sector employees of the federal VA, we will expand the ability to treat all of these veterans, and especially our women veterans, closer to where they live so that they can not only have someone to care for them, but someone that they can see on a repeated basis and begin to bond with. One of the things we've determined is that when a veteran suffering from PTSD or military sexual trauma, MST, has confidence in their care provider, they get well sooner because they take the counseling, they work on the issues that they have to overcome in their lives. And while I can assure you that in some cases the trauma of PTSD and MST never fully goes away, it becomes something that people can learn to live with the proper counseling. Because the federal VA and their counselors in these two critical areas have the expertise to speak with other mental health providers, we strongly urge that they export their medical expertise to these other providers, thus creating a safety net that would be cast across our entire state to deal with folks that are suffering from these two conditions. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Reverend Biden. Oh, okay.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Alon Lambert. I'm the Executive Director of Partnership for Veterans at Risk. I was also on the Task Force of Women Veterans Healthcare. I am a Navy veteran with military sexual trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder, have a 50% rating. I am totally in support of this bill. If I had been able to have someone, whether it was a healthcare provider, understand and perhaps recognize the symptoms of PTSD, of having sexual abuse, whatever it might have been, my life could have been very different. I think I've shared with the committee or parts of the committee from other times that it has affected my life in ways that I have literally had to grieve over the years. I have not had a normal life, that I, what I would consider normal, of being able to be married, have children. I do have children, but in a very convoluted way. And that it's been very difficult for me. I had a suicide attempt when I was 17, prior to this, but it was also from sexual trauma. So my feeling is that if others can be made aware of the symptoms, be made aware of how it shows up in your life, and many people are not aware that it is the drug and alcohol. I had drug and alcohol problems. I've been clean and sober 25 years. I have literally moved in my life 84 times, which is shocking, and it was shocking to me when I finally wrote it out, but it was trying to stay safe. And that's one of the issues that happens. So it affects the person in many different ways, but it also affects their families and their family members. I can tell you that I have been in many times either the ostracized person in my family. When I had a breakdown in 1997 and ended up on the psychiatric unit at the VA hospital, which actually was the best thing that could have happened to me, my response to my family was that I was acting stupid. And so I had nowhere to go. I had no one to help me recognize that something was going on. And I had seen other people. I was not willing to go to the VA prior to that. And so if I had had other people that were aware of the symptoms, perhaps I could have had a very different life than the one I have had. And as Director Willis said, there are things that you can do to be able to live with it. It never goes away. Military sexual trauma I had was almost 40 years ago, but I'm still here. I still know where the exits are. I still know. I'm still hypervigilant. I still have bells on the front door of my house. So it's a very difficult thing to live with. And I know many women. The trainings I've done around the state, I tell my story. I have had other women come up to me and say, I've never told anybody because I didn't think anybody would believe me. And that's one of the biggest challenges. So I just totally support this bill and ask for your passing of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Reverend Biggs and Mr. Torn, you want to come up?
Good afternoon. I'll make this brief. I am Reverend Robert Biggs, the state chairman of the Oregon, of the State Grange. I happen to be chairman of another committee, too. I'm happy to testify about that. You're looking at a post-trauma patient that survived incredible hell. I can tell you a few years ago, I couldn't begin to talk to you about anything without getting so terribly confused and upset about those people sitting behind me that somebody's going to shoot me, hurt me, harm me in some way. That's exactly what happens when one gets affected by this condition. Some people get it lighter, some people get it stronger. As a chaplain on the front line of war, the horrors I saw, I wouldn't begin to try to tell you. It would be out of order. But I want to tell you afterwards, when it hit me, I then found I couldn't tell my wife. And I just pretended like I might have a little nervous disorder. The horrors I went through were just absolutely terrible because they got some little thing would stir me up. And I was a very, very successful businessman. I had a fine operation in Portland. I had my own television shows. I was really on top of the world, but underneath this, I had this horrible thing that I knew was, and I couldn't explain it. I'd heard something about it, but it was like that AIDS thing. When it came out, it was a little egg, you know. We thought that was AIDS. We're all confused. Well, I'll tell you, I worked with hundreds and hundreds of AIDS patients, and I know what they went through, too. But when I finally decided that I had to get some help, I went to the VA, and the doctor put a report in, and he said, well, he's a very, very capable man to explain himself. He's rather theatrical. All preachers have to be, you know. Or there's no money in the pot, that I couldn't say. But anyway, that's the kind of way they brushed it aside at that time. Well, then I got into a situation where I started using the most favorite drug that the world knows, and that's the good old Jim Beam or the good old bottle of beer. And I never was a drinker in my life. My wife and I never allowed anything in our home. So at age 35, I began to use that medicine because there was no other medicine that I could get. Well, I run into a wonderful doctor who is still at the VA in Portland who came in from the East. And he got my case and he said, Reverend Bob, I'm amazed that you function all these years and done these things. You are a very advanced case of post-trauma. And so treatment began with the wonderful doctor and his staff. So some of us on this committee, there are several of us who have had post-trauma, and we have been able to share what we have been through. And we're not afraid to talk up anymore. We want to get the news out, what it is about, like the dear lady that just spoke. Her story, my story, are rampant. We need, as Dr. Jim Sardo, the president, the head of the abuse program for the VA in Vancouver, is counseling us about what we're doing here, about getting some help like this, the bill we're talking about. And he told me to tell you, this is really needed in all parts of Oregon. It can be done fiscally, it can be work, and it will do a miracle to straighten out things I mentioned to you before on the other bill. I appreciate very much you hearing on this, and I don't mind putting my personal testimony about that for the public to know, because it is the truth. And I am so glad that I can be with my 14 grandchildren now. I can function with them. I can live independently without being in one of those facilities I used to have to be in. And I still have a little flash out, but it's not going to be before this committee because I love what you're doing and I trust what you're doing. And God bless. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you. And just, you know, just so you know, I think it's always good for us to hear those stories. You know, we don't live in a base community, and so sometimes I think folks forget that, you know, you've got a soldier or a veteran who lives next door to you, and they might be going through something that you're not. And so, you know, it's always certainly good to knock and check on your neighbors, but this is definitely a special segment of our community that sometimes goes unrecognized. So I appreciate you coming up and sharing your story.
Bless you, Representative Parrish, for saying so.
Thank you.
Anything else, please?
Okay. Anybody else for this bill? Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. We will close the
thank you again.
The public hearing on Senate Bill 276. And we'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 277. Director Willis.
Yes. Senate Bill 277 clarifies the requirement that public employers grant preference to veteran or disabled veteran applying for a vacant civil service position or seeking promotion to civil service position with higher maximum salary rate. This has an emergency clause. It's effective on passage. Went through the Senate. There's no revenue or fiscal impact.
Madam Co-Vice Chair and members of the committee, I'm Jim Willis, Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, here today to support Senate Bill 277. Last session, Oregon's Veterans Preference Law was amended with the goal of ensuring that any veteran who applied for public employment would have their veterans preference points applied to their application materials. Unfortunately, the result was not what was expected. This interim, my agency's Human Resource Department began receiving phone calls from veterans who were applying for public employment. But they were being denied their veterans preference points, and a number of local jurisdictions told veterans that the law did not apply to them based on their interpretation of the language. While we encourage veterans to contact the Bureau of Labor and Industries, which is our partner in ensuring veterans' preference law is applied correctly, I knew that we needed to address the language in the law to make it clear that all public employers are subject to applying veterans' preference points for veterans' applicants. Together with the Judiciary Committee Administrator Bill Taylor and Legislative Council, Senate Bill 277 was drafted to clarify the veterans' preference law. Senate Bill 277 does not change the current law. It only rewrites it in a more understandable way. Our goal is to keep this good law in place, but write it in such a way that there can be no confusion as to whether a public employer must follow the law. I want to thank Bill Taylor, the Legislative Council, and the Bureau of Labor and Industries for their help in this matter, and thank you for your consideration. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the members of the committee may have.
Any questions? Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Willis. I really appreciate you bringing this forward. This is a situation near and dear to my heart, and I want to make it clear. So every public agency out there will understand that these apply to them as a public entity.
That is correct, Representative.
Okay, follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
I appreciate that, and I'll tell you why. Recently I applied for a fire captain's position, and I was contacted by Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue because they had a question about a veteran that participated in one of their promotional processes.
Sure.
I didn't even think about veterans' points for myself. Shame on me. But when they posed the question, I researched it, and I thought, you know, I wonder if those were applied in my situation. So I called the city of Gresham, and they said no, they hadn't been. But they would look into it. And they came back with that we're going to award you the points, but we don't necessarily know that we're supposed to beyond just your initial application. And I said, well, can we check the files back to 1987 and see if we applied those points then? And then it became this issue of, well, we don't know that we need to, but we're going to. My point back was, I happen to know some folks that can change this and make this a little clearer for you in the future, because I wasn't the only one impacted. We had several folks that were, I shouldn't say several in the city, but others as the word spread. So this certainly clarifies it for me. And I want to say thank you for bringing this forward. And I just will point out one more time, this won't be the last. Soldiers have a whole lot of training in a whole lot of areas, and they have supervisor responsibilities at various levels throughout their military career. And yet we're given preference points in a lot of cases for somebody's education. And that's what's happening in our promotional process with the fire department. You can get higher scores in your application just by having a two-year degree than you can for countless years in the military of service. And yet, in the military, you will have gone to basic leadership, primary leadership, and some of those classes. So, to me, this is just one more step in the right direction to recognize we have a lot of leaders at every level. A lot of them are military soldiers. We can recognize that and reward those points when necessary and put them, rather than discipline them for not going to school in some cases, but actually for serving their country as opposed to. So, again, hats off to you and the Senate. I heard this was coming over. I'm excited, and thank you.
Thank you, Representative Matthews and Madam Co-Vice Chair. I want to point out one other thing, and that is there's going to be a draft amendment to House Bill 3207, which relates to folks who apply for these civil service positions, and specifically relates to the substantial military education and training that these folks have received, which I think will weight that military training and education with regard to the kind of examinations you're talking about. So you might call this a preview of coming attractions. Be watching for House Bill 3207, because it's going to further strengthen what you've just talked about. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Escobar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just, you know, that bill came out of here, out of this committee. There was no doubt in anyone's mind what that bill meant. And it's just a shame that we have people that are trying to, in the public, that are trying to circumvent the intent of that bill. And I'm just, shame on them.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I do have Reverend Biggs again on the list. Are you?
I think he's done such an adequate job. I concur. I'd like to say something.
Okay.
I'd like to. Excuse me.
Oops. Sorry.
Oh. Go ahead.
I'm bring you both up.
My name is Nathan Doan. I'm vice chairman of the Veterans Committee here in Salem with the Grange. I'd like to give you a short, brief story of what happened to me when I got out of the military in 1970. I had a year to go in the military when I left Vietnam. I was sent to Fort Riley, Kansas. At Fort Riley, Kansas, of all things, after me being an FO and an infantry, they made me a mail clerk. So for a year, I was a mail clerk for over 1,000 people. In that process, I got to know pretty well what was going on in the mailing department. So when I got out, I filled out an application to be a mail clerk on the outside for the post office. I used my veteran's preference. I scored a 99 total and never heard a word. I don't know what happened. But at that point, I guess I decided, well, I guess I'm not smart enough, or maybe I can't run fast enough that when the dogs chase you or whatever, you know. But I didn't get hired. I didn't get interviewed. And yet I had the experience. Even with my preference, my veteran's preference, I never heard a word from anybody. So I went back to school, and I worked in the school system for a while, but I've done a number of different jobs. But I'm just giving you a little brief story about that. I never heard a word. So, you know, never got chased by a dog, never had anybody angry and throw bottles at me or anything. You know? And I guess that's good in a way, but it's the process. People always use the fact, oh, they fell through the crack. What crack? They fell through people that were just too lazy or disinterested in what had to be done. And this is something we all need to work together. There's no Democrat. There's no Republican. There's one family trying to pull together. That's the way it should be. That's all I got.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Parrish, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities. I apologize. I did not sign up to testify on the bill, and I hopefully the committee will forgive me for not having prepared remarks, but I did want to enter a couple of comments onto the record in regards to this bill. After the passage of the legislation in the 2009 session, forgive me, I don't recall the exact number, the League of Oregon Cities, along with the Association of Oregon Counties, through a joint venture we call Local Government Personnel Institute, which provides human resources and labor law advice to cities and counties in a handful of districts, convened a meeting of human resource directors, and the advice that that LGPI gave to human resource managers in both cities and counties was that veterans preference points should apply in all cases in public employment. After the 07 session, there was some confusion, as Representative Parrish pointed out in the previous committee, and I'll use your words, there was some funky language in regards to defining of civil service, which isn't a common, which isn't in the modern nomenclature for most HR people. But the advice that cities and counties were given was that the preference points should be applied in the cases listed in the statute. And I felt it was important to put that on the record.
Questions?
Just an important follow-up, too. In my case, it came down to, I think, an educational issue. I think, ultimately, the city's doing the right thing, and I think they went and adjusted a police promotion process, too. I just think when these things come out, despite our best efforts, sometimes the educational component is lacking, and we've got to do a better job getting everybody on the same page. But I appreciate your testimony today, and thanks for being here.
Anybody else? Well, I'm kind of right there with you, Representative Matthews. I know that my husband has been through an enormous amount of schooling and papers and requirements that would put any master's program to shame when you look at all the officers' courses and things and the work that's involved, and we've got to find a better way to categorize that and give it relevance in the civilian world, because as we continue to have the conversation at our house about what are you going to do when you grow up and leave the military, he's got, you know, 22 years of experience and no way to quantify that in civilian terms that makes any sense for anybody on the hiring side, and I think that's something this body should work on strongly in this interim and going into the next part of the session, that we solve that problem. So thank you for coming back up.
Thank you.
All right. Anybody else? All right. Then we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 277, and I'm going to pass the gavel to the other side of the dais.
I was going to help, but I guess okay.
We had a scheduled work session for House Bill 2848. We don't need to gavel in on that. We're going to hold that for 1 week, correct? So that will be held over till next week. House Bill 3207, we'll open a work session on House Bill 3207. And we have a dash one amendment for 3207. Can we read the bill?
House Bill 3207 requires a public employer to interview every veteran applicant for a position who meets all the qualifying criteria for the position. There is a dash one amendment, and the amendment limits the interview to veterans who have a transferable skill. A transferable skill is a skill veterans obtain through military education or experience that relates to the civil service position for which the veteran is applying. This has no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact.
Great. And I know there's been a work group through the Association of Counties, also League of Cities. Scott, did you want to testify on this bill, on the amendment? And Tom, did you also want to step up?
Yeah,
and thanks for your work, both of you, on this. And either or you'd like to start it.
Again, for the record, Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities. After the last hearing, the committee tasked the Association of Oregon Counties and League of Oregon Cities to come up with some language that would address, move the ball forward, so to speak. And we kicked around a couple of ideas, and what we came up with some language that you have in front of you that I think ensures that a veteran who is competitive for a position, as has been discussed in this committee before, there may be some difficulty in translating that experience into a civilian public sector employment, will still have an opportunity to make their fair case and have an opportunity to compete substantially for that position. This would move that ball forward, and we support the amendment. I would also add, that, you know, since I've been working in this body, this is my third session, we've seen several bills in this area move forward. What I would respectfully suggest is that the legislature direct, if it's veterans or employment or a combination of the two, and the league, and I'll volunteer my associate, Mr. Elias, from the counties as well, to get together in the interim also, in addition to this bill, and study and figure out what's going on. This, as we heard, the original testimony on this bill, the proponents talked about a higher than average, a higher unemployment rate among a veterans population. Let's move forward in a targeted fashion and figure out why is this population, what's going on in this population, that number is the case. What else do we need to do to solve this problem in a targeted, strategic fashion? And those are my comments.
Great. Any questions for Mr. Winkles? Would you like to hear from Mr. Mann first?
Mr. Mann.
Okay.
Tom? Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Tom Mann with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Excuse me. We had a great meeting.
Do you know where you're working today, Tom?
I don't know where I'm working today, Mr. Chair.
Just checking.
It's been a long session already for some of us. We had a great meeting, League of Oregon Cities and AOC. We met and we talked about how do you get there from here. You remember the discussion was the original bill said interview every veteran, and that was a bridge too far because of the complexity of trying to do that as a jurisdiction. And then I remembered some things we talked about in the interim about transferable skills. And this has to go with that conversation we're going to have about direct licensing. If you're a combat medic, you should be able to come out and get a job as an ENT. And so why? Because you have transferable skills. So we took that language and said, is there a way that the local jurisdictions will feel comfortable by saying if somebody can demonstrate they have transferable skills at a substantial level that meet the criteria of the job in question, even though they don't have the right degree, even though they don't have the right resume, that transferable skill will put them in the running for that job, they can get the interview. Well, we brought that back to Mac McDonald. Mac was happy because it met his criteria of making sure veterans got interviews. It met the criteria for Representative Matthews, who was making sure that if you didn't have the right education, but you did have all this education or knowledge from the military, that was transferred to the job. And it met kind of the criteria we're talking about with these unemployed soldiers and sailors, airmen, and marine, to make sure we can get them in the job market and get them in front of people to show what great skills and leadership they have for jobs. So we felt very good about the amendment. I want to thank AOC and Locke for just their cooperation on this, because when we came into that first committee, it seemed like it was going to be pretty hard to get there. But through a lot of cooperation, this amendment really does a good job. I appreciate what he said about working in the interim. We've done some of that through the reintegration task forces we've done. There is some information about veteran unemployment, but this is not an Oregon issue. This is a national issue. And so Oregon is leading the way once again to try to do something to help this veteran population. So we're very excited about this amendment.
Great, thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Escobar.
So you two would like to see something that gives you an ability to have an interim work group and or task force to work on veterans' employment. Is that what you're asking?
Co-Vice Chair Matthews, Co-Chair Escobar, that was my suggestion. We do support the bill as the bill amended with the dash ones and moving that forward. We have no objections with doing that. I simply offered that as something in addition that could happen to address the issue that we're all very concerned with.
So, what about you? Where are you at on this, Tom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Escobar, we'd be happy to do a work group on veteran unemployment. I think that we should get away from the big task force type of things we've been doing. We've done four of them now. I think a lot of the work left would be work groupish. Maybe we can talk about veteran unemployment.
Work groupish?
Work groupish, yeah. I have a degree in journalism, so I get to make up words. We can talk about veteran unemployment. We can talk about direct licensing in work groups, and I think that would be a really good way to go from here on out.
Tom, let me follow up.
Follow up.
Then would you need a bill to do that, or would you just take it upon yourself to do so?
Mr. Chair, Representative Squill, if you wanted legislative authority to do it, this committee itself could form a work group without a bill to work during the interim and report back to you at the next session.
Okay. Will you work with staff and
absolutely,
we'll set that up?
Thank you for that.
Co-Vice Chair, I would just want to correct the comments. I wasn't actually at the meeting. I was in D.C. and participating electronically, so let the record reflect.
It was like you were there, though.
Wonderful.
Right.
And your acronym just became, instead of LOC now, it's LOC, apparently. So, yes, Representative Parrish.
Tom, quick question for you. Has any other state kind of tackled this notion of trying to quantify, you know, what a soldier's skills are, and so that we can put that in the workplace? Is there any model language out there? I mean, task force, I'm not really big on them either. I'm kind of more like borrow and make it fit Oregon. So is there anybody out there that has done this kind of work, or would we be blazing a path?
Mr. Chair, Representative Parrish, I am not aware of it. I'm not sure if we're blazing paths or not. I know the concept of transferable skills comes from the idea of the accreditation for education, taking those military credits and moving them to college credits. They talk about transferable skills in that process as well. But I don't know if they've gone as far as this bill does, saying you're going to actually, in the job application process, look at those transferable skills to move to the next level of interview. I think we may be unique in that, because I've just not heard of that.
Okay, thank you.
Great, and thank you for the work. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else signed up to testify on the Dash 1 amendments for House Bill 3207?
Invite only in work
session. It's invite only in work session, so we're not going to invite you out. Official. Thank you, Representative. Appreciate that. So, do we have a motion? Representative Escobar.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Addendum 1 to 3207, House Bill 3207, to be attached as an addendum.
Okay, Representative Escobar moves the Dash 1 amendments to be attached as an addendum to House Bill 3207. Comments from the committee? Does anybody object? Are you comfortable doing this? Is that a roll call vote?
Fine. No one objects. That's good.
So moved. Representative Escobar.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3207 to the House floor. I believe that's where we can send it with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Escobar moves House Bill 3207 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Any comments from the committee? Any opposition to the motion? Seeing no opposition, so moved. House Bill 3207 as amended will move to the floor. We need a carrier for this bill.
Well,
if Would you like to carry it, Representative Parrish?
Absolutely.
Well, Representative Parrish carried the bill, and I may add comments on the bill as well. Nice work. Moving on, it looks like House Bill 3335 had a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. It was scheduled for a work session. That will be held over as well. And House Bill 3416, we have not gotten the fiscal back on that, and that also had subsequent referral. And there's an amendment forthcoming, I believe. Is that on 3335? Is that correct?
There is an amendment on 3335 and House Bill 3416 as well.
Would you prefer that we not hold over a week and move the amendment to the bill, or would you rather not do that today?
I think we just hold it until we get everything in line.
We'll hold over 3335 and House Bill 3416, hold over till next week. So those will be on the calendar for Tuesday. Moving on, we have a work session for House Joint Memorial 8. Open up a work session.
House Joint Memorial 8 urges Congress to require the United States Armed Forces to investigate cultural barriers and provide proposed solutions. This has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
No revenue impact and no fiscal impact. Is there a motion? Representative Escobar.
I move House Joint Memorial 8 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves House Joint Memorial 8 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments from the committee? Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing no opposition, so moved. We'll now open a work session on House Joint Memorial 15.
We need a
carrier.
We need a carrier for House Joint Memorial 8. Getting ahead of us. Can open a work session to assign a carrier to House Joint Memorial 8. Hang in there with me. Thank you. Do we have any volunteers to carry House Joint Memorial 8?
I volunteer Representative Huffman.
Representative Escobar has volunteered himself.
Mr. Co-Chair, can I do it, please?
Representative Huffman, you'll be the carrier of House Memorial 8 with respect to the chair to my left and your right for the viewing audience at home. Close the work session. Representative Huffman will carry House Joint Memorial 8. Now we'll open a work session, House Joint Memorial 15.
House Joint Memorial 15 urges Congress to enact community-based health care legislation for veterans. This also has no revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
No revenue impact, no fiscal impact. Do I have a motion from a member on the committee?
I guess I will.
Representative Escobar?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Memorial, 15?
Yes.
15. To the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves House Joint Memorial 15 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any comments from the committee? Any opposition to the motion? Seeing no opposition, so moved. We will assign a carrier, and that, I believe, is Representative Cowens. So unless you have a burning desire to co-carry that with her, Representative Cowan will carry House Joint Memorial 15. Thank you, and I see Patrick sitting in the back. Close that work session on House Joint Memorial 15 and open a work session on House Joint Memorial 18.
House Joint Memorial 18 urges Congress to make funding of veterans' health care a permanent and direct entitlement. This has no revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
No fiscal and no revenue impacts on House Joint Memorial 18. Are there any comments from the committee on House Joint Memorial 18? Seeing no comments, do I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 18 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Escobar moves House Joint Memorial 18 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments from the committee? Is there any opposition to the motion? So moved. House Joint Memorial 18 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Escobar, that is your joint memorial, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Appreciate you carrying that. We will close the work session on House Joint Memorial 18. Anything for the good of the order? Nothing for the good of the order. I would just like to say today we had a few of our folks testify today that shared a great deal of courage and a great deal of their story and personal pain. And I congratulate you on overcoming those. I know that it's work in progress. We sure appreciate your participation in this committee, not only taking of yourself as a veteran, but also what you're doing for all the veterans out there. So thank you all. Fine work, and we'll see you again next week. And Representative Escobar?
A couple things. One is remember that tomorrow, I believe it's tomorrow at 10 o'clock, in the governor's signing room, we're going to sign the bill to welcome home the Vietnam veterans, and you're all welcome to attend. The other thing is I want to compliment this committee on the fact that we are a very productive committee and we get a lot done in a short period of time. It's unfortunate this doesn't spill over to some other of my committees.
Yes.
But anyway. Closer.
So with that, we will close the House Committee on Veterans Affairs.
Good job.
There you go.